you hear me? I can't see you.
Oh. Yeah.
No. We have a screen share on.
Oh, okay. Then just when you're ready, go.
You should see Peter's desktop.
Yes, I can.
Yeah. So.
Good evening.
Yes, good evening. Right.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
All right.
Good. Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
I'm having a screen share at the moment, Paul, so all you can see is Peter's screen at the moment.
Yeah.
I can see Peter.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
Peter, do you want to, like, maybe unshare it until it starts, or?
Yeah. How do you unshare?
It's one of the... It might be a floating bar at the top now.
I have, but it just says new share. I've got it, Gerben.
All
stop
right.
Share.
Yeah. There we are.
Yeah. There we are. Yeah.
Good evening, all.
Good evening, David.
Good evening, David. Are you set now? I hear you just getting sharing sorted out.
Yes, we're all done.
Yeah, good. Be all right.
Excellent. No technical hitches.
Should I change my tablet to black and white monitor as opposed to colour?
It is mandatory.
Excellent. Well, good evening, Paul, as well, everybody.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And Galaxy Tab A has joined us. Excellent. Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
There's Ed.
Evening, Ed.
Evening.
Good evening, Ed.
Good evening.
Good evening, Ed. Paul, if you don't mind me saying so, you look a bit scruffed.
Don't say that because Glynis is in the background.
Yeah.
I can see that. Looking as gorgeous as ever.
Thank you. I'm glad you said that about me.
Classic.
Are you all right?
Yes, may I?
Never mind, I'm already recording now, so...
Okay, thanks.
Clearly in lockdown, the price of razor blades have gone up a lot, haven't they? They've just
been
expensive.
Same with haircuts.
Exactly.
The lawn mowers are very good as long as you keep still.
Evening, Doreen.
Good evening, Doreen.
Evening, Doreen.
Yes. I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
Hey, Doreen.
Hello. Hi.
Gallery view. There we are. Hi, Doreen.
Hi, Ed. Are you all right?
I'm fine, yes.
You enjoying the fine weather?
Absolutely. Lovely. We had a run up to near Crash that day. It was lovely.
Oh, lovely.
Very quiet as well. Picked a nice quiet spot.
Good.
What do you do for the toilet?
That's personal.
I keep a bit of string in my pocket.
Oh, tell you what, cable tie works better.
somebody got that phone.
This where Peter, you want to go to rock? Went to rock. We didn't go inside the wood, but went to rock. Not a soul there. Very quiet.
Very good.
So, been lovely today. It's been super. Not too brilliant. Anybody out? I'd imagine the Bamburgh place would be busy, mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll see. My neighbour's been to see houses and was saying all the motorbike people were out eating fish and chips and ice creams, but using behind the bus stop is where the toilet is.
Were they open? Because most of the facilities are shut everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah, they're shut. They better open if they're using...
Oh, dear.
Good evening, Fred, Peter, Paul.
Good evening, Fred. Good evening, Paul.
Paul, you've lost weight. Oh, he's gone. Well, how are you feeling a bit better, Paul?
It's been just the last day or two. I just started to feel slightly better, but it's just absolutely flawed, really tired. I feel as if I've still got a constant cold.
Yeah.
But
have you been tested or not? Just assumed.
No, it's I couldn't get tested because I was trying to get like a postal one, but I could never get one. And I felt as if I didn't want to travel because you're not supposed to leave the home.
No, I think you're right.
What's the difference? You look as if you've lost weight, Paul.
Yeah.
I was on the scales this morning. I've lost 3 pounds. I'm surprised because you've just been sitting around and, well, I have lost my appetite. I've just started eating over the last couple of days.
Well, nice to see you back anyway. I hope you're on the mend.
Hi, lads.
Hi there.
What are you doing? Who else have we got?
Evening, everybody.
Evening. Good evening. Has arrived. Sandra. Good evening, Sandra.
The Scotchies are here.
Hi, Sandra.
Yeah.
Hi. You all right?
Yeah, good. Thanks. How's everyone down there?
Good, thank you. Nice to see you again.
Yes. Well, one of these days I'll get back down there. Yeah. So is it warm down there as well as up here?
Very
lovely. Oh, yeah.
I think we're calling it. Who's shouting now? David's fallen off his chair, look. Oh. The sound was. Looks like he's fallen off his chair. Maybe that was the sound. Anyway, nice to see you, Paul. I'm pleased you're on the mend.
Yeah, nice to get back.
Yeah. It'll be about another week before you feel like anything in particular.
I went up for a walk today and it took some effort.
Yeah.
I found a struggle to walk up hills, couldn't get your breath.
Yeah.
Have you had the COVID?
Yeah, I've had it quite bad, actually.
Oh.
I'm probably now in the fifth week. We're recovering. It's a recovery part is the worst bit.
Mm-hmm. So slow.
But you weren't in hospital, were you?
No, I was talking to the doctor and thought I wasn't quite bad enough to go into hospital. But I've been there in a separate bed for the last, 3 weeks? Because I was just coughing all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful. Mm-hmm. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Linda.
Sorry, I'm a bit late. I had a struggle getting into. Oh dear me.
Oh, you're disappearing.
I know. I was trying to be fancy on a different Zoom thing, and
I thought
it would go away automatically, but I don't know how to get rid of it.
You've had a hell of a suntan in San Francisco.
I did it the other night and I had to come out of Zoom and go back in.
Well, I've been out. This happened yesterday.
Well, Linda, go down to where it says stop video and there's a little up arrow.
Yeah.
Click on that up arrow.
Yeah, I'm in that at the minute.
Right, just let me see what it says. And it says choose virtual background.
Click on
that. Oh, there we are.
Is that better?
That's better.
That's normal.
No. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Put the other one on, Linda.
Huh?
Put the other one on.
Well, I was trying to be clever yesterday, but it backfired a bit.
Yeah.
Carol's asked us to tender her apologies. It's been so hot today, she's doing some gardening.
Right. Do you think Les has arrived. Kathleen's arrived. Excellent. Welcome.
Hello, folks.
Hey, Kathleen.
Hello, Les.
Hiya.
Are we expecting anybody else to know?
Colin. Hello, Sandra.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi.
I wondered if you'd join tonight.
Yes, I thought I would give it a go. See, because I haven't been down there on a Friday. I've only been down there about twice since we moved up here, so.
So, Sandra, which club are you in up in
Livingston. Livingston.
Oh, you're in Livingston.
Yep.
So are they doing this sort of thing, Sandra? Are they doing
We do it on a Monday night. We've had a couple of speakers, and this Monday we're having people showing their images and things like that, yeah. The Zoom's brilliant. It really is good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good evening, anyway. Let's start. This is the first of our summer season program, which has been circulated by Alan in his wonderful Bits and Pieces newsletters. So this is the real start of our summer season. There's a few of us, a little group of us, pulled this together, and I hope the summer season works very well. So the first night is tonight. So I'll hand over to Peter to talk a bit about his black and white techniques. So over to you, Peter.
Right, thanks, David. Evening, everybody. I'm going to share this. So,
Peter, did you manage to find a sharp image?
Yeah.
Good.
And where's that?
Could you draw where's everybody that? Was muted out.
Okay, let's see if Peter speak anyway.
Are you muted out or not?
Anyway,
you want me to do it?
Share your screen, Peter.
You've got me screen, I know that. I just wanted to mute it.
I'll do it.
Is everybody muted out?
Gerben can mute everybody.
Yeah, there we go. It's done.
Gerben, we need to hear Peter, I think. Gerben, we need to hear Peter.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now, Peter, yes, thank you.
Okay. Start again. Okay. Yeah. I got into club photography around about 79, 80. We started a works camera club off. The pal of mine, Eric Bennett, and I started that off. But at the same time, we got invited to join Washington Camera Club. And when I joined Washington, that's when I got to know Ken Henderson, who became a lifelong friend, and another guy called John Walsh. And it was John Walsh who invited me and Eric into his dark room. And that's when the eternal flame was lit with black and white printing. It was absolutely incredible to see the first image come up in the dish. And from there, I went on to meet people like Arnold Hubbard, Bert Spell, and eventually Les McLean. And Les McLean was a revelation for me. He taught me how to print properly. And I'd go on darkroom courses with Les and Eric as well. He came along, and it was unbelievable the magic that happened when you see the print coming up on the dish. So these images are just going to go on through while I prattle on a bit, like, you know. And Les was a great mentor. At any time I had any problems, I could ring him up. And he would help me through any technical things that I needed to know for the printing. I was very fortunate that I was able to build my own darkroom in the spare room. And also at that particular time, I met people like Leo Palmer, who has been a great mentor as well. And I also got introduced to a company called Silver Print. And they used to produce this handbook, which was like a Bible. It gave you lots of experiments, and that's what I did. I used to experiment no end, unbelievable amount of time that I used to spend experimenting, trying to get the printing better and better and better. And I just kept pushing the boundaries and pushing the boundaries. And then in the mid-80s, I think I'd already met Roy, and I was invited to join other photographers in a group we called Imprint. And there was Roy, there was Frank Buick, David Hall, Clifford Tweets, and of course my great pal Alan Fowler. Alan and I just clicked immediately, and we got on so well for many, many years. And of course the Imprint group, they pushed hard as well. One of our main aims was to have exhibitions, and we did. We exhibited from Barrack to Bath to Berwick and back again. And probably over the years, we might have had close to about 20 exhibitions. And you slowly sort of built a reputation as a black and white printer. And if you didn't produce the goods for the Imprint group, they were very, very quickly told you, you know, that it wasn't up to scratch. And of course, at the time as well, round about the mid to late 80s, I also got involved with an NCPF as competition secretary. And that was brilliant because I had an absolutely fantastic countrywide network of people that I met through the NCPF. And again, you know, the learning curve was just incredible. The amount of people that was just so willing to help. And it's something that I've tried to do over the years, is to continue to push and help people as much as I possibly can. One of the things that I discovered very early on, that you can't make a silk purse from a sow's ear. That rings true with a lot of things. And I've tried to maintain a level of quality for a long time. When digital printing came along, it came just at the right time for me, because darkroom work was getting a little bit tedious for me, and digital came at the right time. And I can remember Arnold Hubbard and one or two other people couldn't believe that I was giving up the darkroom. But then the interesting thing was, like, Arnold and Frank Buick were quickly to follow. People realised just where digital was going, and analogue was, well, it wasn't dying, but it was certainly less popular. And it was a struggle at first. The only way I could get a decent print at first was using lice and matte papers, because on gloss papers we had this dreadful cast, which was caused, we didn't know at the time, but it was caused by the phosphors that were introduced into the paper to give it a bright white. And you've got these casts like magenta and sometimes green. And it depended on the light that you were viewing the print as well, you get different colours. And it's what you call metamerism, which is a mouthful in itself. Eventually I was introduced to photospeed papers, and I've been using photospeed papers now for a long time. And I refuse to change, because I'm so used to their papers and their inks, etc., that I think it's a huge mistake to keep chopping and changing different papers. I keep getting lots of bells and whistles here, Gerb, and I don't know what's happening. Unless it's people joining, you know.
It's just the Avon lady calling.
Avon lady. Yeah. I thought I'd put this quick slideshow on while I prattle on. It lasts less than 10 minutes, so we must be getting pretty near the end by now. And then we can get into the real nitty-gritty. I think I've said all I want to say really there, so we'll just get through it. Let these run through. There's not many left. And we'll get to the nitty-gritty. I can remember when Bert Snell decided he would go digital route. He was terrified of telling Arnold, but he had to eventually, and then Arnold joined the Merry Band as well and became very adept at Photoshop, etc. I've recently gone back to using Photoshop. I was using Lightroom for quite a while, and then I discovered Lightroom was corrupting my profiles for printing. So I've gone back to Photoshop. I'll actually pay for the monthly plan, the photo plan, £9 a month. And you get all the updates, etc. I'm quite happy doing that. I think there's something else to say while this is going on. I could stop it, of course. I suppose I could just stop it. and then we can get on with it and get on with the rest of the talk. So that can come out of that. That was Fastone, by the way. If you've never used it before, it's brilliant. Anyway, I discovered Ansel Adams. And Ansel Adams, I discovered Ansel Adams through Les McLean. Les McLean was a true devotee of Ansel Adams, and I think I became one as well. And Ansel Adams was accredited, rightly or wrongly, with inventing the zone system. This is the zone system, the chart at the bottom. Those blocks or segments, whatever you want to call them. And that's the range of contrast you had in film. Now, in digital, the range is far greater. In fact, that's the range in digital. There's 19 segments there, or 19 zones. I don't know if there is actually 19. When you get towards the blacks here, there's, so on my screen I can see separation on most of them. Did they get to these two end ones? I can't see any separation between them, but the rest is certainly separation. And your camera, if you didn't know it, your camera always meters to the mid-gray in this area here. So your camera's producing black and white whether you like it or not. That's what it's metering. But anyway, so that I don't want to prattle on too much about the zone system, because it can be a lot of complicated to a lot of people, and plus I don't want to bore you with it. But that's the kind of number, the zone, like the zones in a print that you're looking for. Of course, you know, you get to this end, you've got your low key, and you've got this end, you've got your high key, but vast majority of prints are mid key. And that's the sort of tonality that you're going to look for. That's the ideal. So we'll get on with this. Anyway, print assessment is the most important thing when you come to do, whether it's monochrome or colour, it makes no difference. The assessment is vital. If you don't make a correct assessment, then you might not be getting the best out of your image, out of your file or your negative, whatever you want to call it. So I use the raw filter. I've already how can I get rid of this? There we go. Just take that there. I've already made a copy of this, so I always work on a copy. I don't work on the original, and I've also taken the liberty of making a layer. So I'm working on the layer, and then I go into the raw filter, the camera raw filter. There's lots of shortcuts, but I'm not going to use too many shortcuts tonight. I'd rather you find the long way around, so you know where they are. And the raw filter is pretty much the same as what it is in Lightroom. There might be some differences. If there is, I haven't noticed what they are. I don't know what they are. The first thing you notice about this, of course, like it's just lying over, isn't it? The bridge is tilting. So you've got this lovely little transform tool up here. You can put it on automatic, or you can do it manually, whatever you want. Automatic's pretty good. Just about straightens everything up. Okay, this lamppost's lying over a little bit, but I don't mind that too much. I can straighten that a bit more later on. But what we want to get is to this. It's quite simple. It's when I kind of done a practice the other day, and I've done a complete process of this image in just over a minute. That's how simple it is to get these monochrome images, you know. And the first thing I've done, of course, is flick it into black and white. And then you're going to look for the white point and the black point. The only way you can tell what's information you've got in your images to produce a really flat image, and you can do that by dragging the highlights across. And if you look in the highlights where the sunburst is, you can see how you're bringing the highlights back in, and you do the same with the shadows but the opposite way, and you're finding out all the information you've got in that picture. You can see the information here on this guy's back here, and that's what I use as a reference point. Every print I do, I have a reference point. And I keep referring to that to see what I'm doing, if I'm degrading it or what. And the next thing to do is find your white point and your black point. Hold the Alt key down, pick up the white, and the screen turns to black. And you drag it to the right, opposite way to the highlights, till you get one pixel, or near enough one. That'll do for this. And you do the same with the black again, but in the opposite direction. This time the screen's gone white. You're still holding the Alt key down, and you drag it along till you get a black pixel. There we go, bottom right-hand corner, there's black pixel. And there we've got it. That's the perfect image to make an assessment. It's as flat as the proverbial fort, but that's what we've got. And that's what you need to make that assessment. From there, you can decide how much contrast, how much clarity and texture, etc. you want to put in it. The clarity button, that works on the mid-tones. So we'll give it a bit of clarity, not too much. Be careful what you're doing with it, because it also has the effect of sharpening, and it can create, you know, the fringe or haloing or whatever you want to call it around your edges. Same with the texture. I love working with the texture because it brings a lot of detail into the image. And then we can do with a little bit of contrast in here as well. And there we go. The next thing I do, if you go up here, you see all the different effects you've got up here. And if you go to FX, you can put a crop around, a vignette. And I always put a bit of a vignette on. It just holds all the edges in. It's a trick we used to do in the darkroom. Every darkroom print, we just give it a couple of seconds extra on the edges just to hold everything in. Now, what you can do, you can keep toggling here, go back to the original, and just keep toggling to see where you've gone with it all. Now, whether you're doing monochrome, black and white, or colour, the process is exactly the same. And I would dare to suggest that if you're not using this method or something very similar, you're probably not getting the best out of your image. And it's so simple. Gerben's recording this, so you don't have to take it all in now. If you're really interested, you can play through it again at some other date. Anyway, once we've got that, when you're doing black and white, I always think about colour. Because if you look at the colour here, it's predominantly yellows and oranges, isn't it? That part of the colour wheel. And if we go up to here, there's a black and white mix. Now, this is where you can alter contrast locally. The other thing that I've done earlier, that was altering everything globally. Now we can alter things locally. So if we pick up the orange, then you can see the effect it has by just working on the orange spectrum, you know. Same with the yellow. You might put a bit, let's go to the extremes, obviously. But you can alter the contrast locally. And of course, when you've got a picture with a lot more colour in, which I'll demonstrate later, then you can alter it more and more. Now when you go to colour, you've also got the added effect of the vibrance and saturation tool, which I'm not going to use because we're working in the black and white. Well, I'm just about done with that. You can see how quick it is, how easy it is, how simple it is. We'll okay to that. The only thing that I occasionally do is, as I use the image adjustments, and I use the gradient map, which sometimes just gives it an extra little bit of kick. And you can see that there, and that is the finished image. All the while I've been watching my reference point here, and the detail is still there. In fact, the detail is better now than what it was when we first started. We've got a beautiful range of tones in the picture, from, you know, from the whites all the way through to the blacks. The only thing that I might do now is this specular highlight here. I might add a very tiny amount of grain just to that area. I would select that out and add just a little bit of grain to put a bit of detail in, because there's not a lot of detail there. Sometimes if you're burning, just locally burning, it just goes muddy. I'd rather just add a little bit of grain, and that gives you the effective detail. But that's it in a nutshell. So we can come out of that image. Oops, that's okay on that. I'm not going to save it. And we can pick up another image. What I want to show you, that's an image I've done on my Canon. I think it was about 2011. And I was very happy with it, you know, at the time. I don't remember how I used to process them. And then I learned about the method I'm using now. And this is the new method. And you can see the difference. You can see the texture in the clouds. You can see in this area here where the shadows have now unblocked. In here, we've got lots and lots more detail. And a lot of my photographs I'm revisiting and reprocessing them, because I'm getting so much more detail out of it. So much more detail. And this is one of my all-time favorite images. And the range of tones in there and the range of detail is just tremendous. You know, you've got all these beautiful tones towards the lighter area, the spectrum, and then the shadows has got details in it as well, you know. What I want to show you is just a couple of other little things. Always make a duplicate. Okay. Don't know why that's staying up. Anyway, we'll pick up the camera raw filter. How do I get rid of that?
Just try your esc, see if it'll come up.
No, it's not going to come out. We might have to just live with it for a little while. Oh, well, this is grayed out now. Ah, there we go. Gone. Anyway, yeah. Back to the raw filter. Over here, we've got some presets. Now, I'm just going to save you £300 or £400 by telling you not to bother going and get your camera converted to infrared. It's got a beautiful infrared conversion there, a preset. It's absolutely wonderful. And you can see that all it's done is shifted the highlights along there, taken a little bit of clarity out, and that's it. And you've got this infrared. I tend to just soften it a bit by taking the dehaze button slightly to the left and maybe adding just a little bit of texture. And I like the infrareds to be just a little bit brighter than that, so I'll just do a little bit of more exposure, and that's it. Then you've got your infrared done, dusted, nothing more to do to it. It's that simple. Brilliant. But there's loads of other presets as well in this, you know. You can just go through them at your leisure if you're on Photoshop or Lightroom. I think you get the presets in Lightroom as well. And I wouldn't do anything more than that to that image. There's nothing more you would want to do. I wouldn't even bother putting a vignette around it. So we'll come from that to that. Okay. I'll just shut that down. I won't bother saving it. And then I'll get rid of that just in case that's slowing us down. One of the other ones I was wanting to just to demonstrate is, like, quite often in the club we get images like this where the highlights are completely blown, you know, and this is so easy to recover them, you know. It's a formula you know, you drag the highlights to the left and there's all your highlights back, you know. And quite often, you know, you've got a problem highlight and it's that simple to do, you know. Same thing again, open up the shadows, alt key down, find your white point. That's too much there. You just have to leave that as it is, you know. The specular highlights on the ice. And then we can find the black. What I didn't do was go into monochrome, into black and white rather, and then, you know, just play around with your clarity till you're happy with it. My reference point on this picture is in here. It could be up here as well, you know, whatever you want. Send me a text. Text just seemed to bring the whole image alive. You know, then a little bit of the dehaze just to take out any haze that's on that. And then put the vignette round as always. Almost every picture gets a vignette. And the colours, there was no colour really in that picture to alter anything apart from blues. So we could alter the blue here and in here, just darken them down a bit. And that kind of holds the image in a little bit. I think we'll just open the image at that. I forgot to duplicate that one, but never mind. You got the idea. I'll just not save it when I take it off. Again, the only other thing I might have a look at is the adjustments and the gradient map just to save it. It gives it a nice little kick, doesn't it? It's amazing. It's just altering the contrast. That's all it's doing. We probably could have spent a little bit more time altering the contrast than the raw filter. Would have done exactly the same thing. So you can see how really, really is a very, very simple method of the processing. Here we've got one. This is Gerben's front garden, the tree just over the road from him. Very, very dull day. In fact, it might have been snowing at the time. I can't remember. It was taken a long time ago. And it's just something I revisited again because I've always liked this. I've always liked the way the fence disappears into the mist. And so we'll just go to the camera raw filter. And I should have duplicated again, but it doesn't matter. I'm not saving them. Same formula again, over with the highlights, cross with the shadows. We've opened it up. We can see where our information is here. This is where the point of reference is going to be. We've got the whites. The white's going to be dragged right across before we get any pixels coming up. Same with the blacks. Blacks are just starting to come up and it's just so simple. And then, you know, you can just add your clarity, add a bit of texture, maybe a bit of contrast in this one. There's no haze, so there's no dehaze to worry about on that one. And that's it. Why would you want to do anything else? We've got what you would class as like a pen and ink sort of picture. The detail is not there because it wasn't there, you know, there was no light about, but then that's what it's all about. It's all about that fence disappearing into the mist and the loneliness of that tree. So, you know, again, it's just a great example of how simple this process is. And I hope you take it up one way or another. What I want to show you, this is another one here. Just switch me off if you're getting bored. Again, I'm not going to bother duplicating and all that and putting it on a layer. You know what you've got to do, what you're supposed to do. We'll just quicken it up. Now, make an assessment of this one. We can all say what's wrong with it. The shadow detail is horrendous, isn't it? It just isn't anything there. The highlight, the sky, it's not very good. But again, we just drag it over. You know, we've got all those highlights in. Look at the beautiful colour of the sky now. And then the shadows. Look at that detail. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible how you're able to rescue. Okay, we've got a bit of a problem up here, but that's not really a great problem. We can pick up this little brush here, pick up the mask, and we can mask that off. I'm not gonna try and be fancy and get it very accurate. That'll do. Take the mask off. Up here, you can reset the local, all these local corrections, you can reset them. And we can just alter the exposure on that one little bit. There's the exposure there. And then we'll probably do the same thing actually with the rock down in the bottom. We'll mask that off. We'll darken that down a little bit. This time we'll take it that way. It's all about balancing your picture, isn't it? It's all about getting this area here, a bit like that, a bit like up here. And we'll toggle back and forwards. You can see where we've gone. It's truly amazing rescue, really, isn't it? And the rest, of course, is just what you want to do with it, you know. Do you want to put a bit of clarity in, put a texture in, take a little bit of the haze off. I might just increase the exposure slightly because I'm going to put the vignette around this one. And then we'll go okay to that. There's a few other little things I would probably do to it, you know. But the main thing is we've now got this little bit of a fringe or halo or rim lighting, whatever you want to call it, you know. It's so easy to get rid of it. Just make a copy of your layer. Change the thing to darken, and then pick up the bottom layer, the background layer, and go to your clone tool, pick that up, pick an area up here that you want to use the clone from, alt, left click on your mouse, go back to your top copy, and just paint it in, and you can get rid of all that halo. So it's as simple as that. You can see it on and off. Dead easy. You go around the whole lot eventually. I think we'll put the sound back on, Durbin, and can we unmute everyone? Is everybody unmuted?
No, I'm looking for it.
Right. I'm not sure where I've got it either.
I'll just unmute everyone. 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Oh. Are we done?
Oh. Done.
Oh. Thank you,
indeed. I don't want to come across and saying this is the only way. You know, it's some people will be reluctant to change the way they process their images, but what I would say is this: have a think about how you process the images, have a think about whether you can improve what you're doing, which is what it's all about. At the end of the day, you know, we spend an awful lot of money on camera, lenses, etc., and the last thing you want to do is produce prints that are really inferior after spending all that money, you know. That's why I won't entertain cheap paper or cheap ink. I just don't think it's worth it. I use the PhotoSpeed paper and the PhotoSpeed ink. I'll stick with that as long as I can. My biggest regret with PhotoSpeed is to stop making the warm tone paper. It's absolutely gorgeous and just stop making it. And I think there's a lot of people who haven't actually been inside a dark room or experienced a dark room, they probably don't understand the quality of the warm tone that you can get out your prints. I started with Agfa papers, and though, they're sublime, you know, they're beautiful papers. And quite a warm tone. The range of Agfa papers were very, very good. But so was Ilford Gallery and stuff like that, you know. But I stuck to the paper until Agfa actually, they used to put cadmium in the paper. And when they stopped putting it in, the papers weren't as good. And at that point, I went on to multigrade. But then they did get it right again. But by then, I'd already was enjoying the advantages of using multi-grade papers. Of course, we don't have to worry about grades of paper now that we're with digital. But there is a link. I found a video on YouTube about what goes on in the dark room. I'll send that to Alan, along with that Ansel Adams zone system. And if you can be bothered to look at it, I think you'll find that it's really, really useful in your assessment of your prints. And the dark room video is a couple of guys in America, like, they're really crazy. Like, you'll have a good time watching it. Probably lasts about 40 minutes or something like that. But they take you right through the process, and it's fascinating, really. For anybody that's never been in the dark room, and it gives you an insight as to what we are pursuing in a print. And of course, you know, processing these images is exactly the same for your projection. Trying to improve the projection. I mean, projected images will never be as good as a print, because they're on the screen and off. A print lives forever. It's there for you to look at every day if you want to. And that's why I print. I'll take any questions if anybody's got any.
I've got one.
I hope it was useful. We'll try and get the questions in an organised way if we can. They're talking over each other, you know.
Did you want to keep your screen share on, Peter, or do you want to have the people back?
People might
ask questions about how to do something, I suppose.
there is one other image I would have worked on, just to show you how you can not only do global contrast but local contrast. Because this image on the screen at the moment, you can see it's got yellows, blues, reds in it, and it's quite interesting how you can alter the contrast locally rather than just globally. You can do all sorts of stuff, like with, you know, you can darken the red, or you could lighten it, in this instance, I was darkening the red and lighting, making the blue a bit lighter, you know. I didn't bother touching the yellow because it was such a small part of the picture space, you know. But if people want to ask questions, that's fine, just fire away.
Linda wanted to first, I think.
Peter. I didn't understand something that you were talking about, and it's something that seemed so simple, but I just didn't grasp it. You were talking about the zone system and the one that Ansel Adams used, which has 9 grades, and then what you get from your digital image, which has 16 grades or however many.
Yeah.
But I couldn't understand that, because surely black's black and white's white, and you get a spectrum between them, of all shades of grey. So I couldn't understand how in print you could have
What I should have said, Linda, I'm sorry for that. Like, I did. When you're doing these demos, you know, you're very conscious of the fact that a lot of people might not be interested, or you're making it too long. So I do tend to gallop along a little bit. And but what it is, I'll bring that back up again. That image there. Yeah. What it is with the Ansel Adams ones, you kind of jump from one tone to another, if you understand that. Now this is much smoother, and that's what it gives you. It gives you a much smoother rendition from one tone to the next. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but surely when you print, you could also get that. Ansel Adams could have got that from a print if he'd wanted, or are you saying you can't get it from a print?
You couldn't get this number of stops.
No, he's talking about the capacity of film, isn't he? To show films. And electronically, you can show more. And on paper, you can usually show less.
Peter, maybe it's worthwhile showing that first Word document that you had, because it said also what the purpose of each zone was. And that might clarify it a bit more. Because I think each zone has a specific purpose kind of thing in the image. Yeah. So obviously you get like a near, like smooth gradient in digital. But each zone has a specific purpose, and that's what Ansel Adams was all about.
That's right. Yeah.
Each zone is one stop, isn't it?
Yeah, each zone is one stop.
So he was showing his division was a stop. Yeah.
So it's not the tones that you can get in your image. It's what you get out of your film. Is it?
Yeah.
I'm still not sure I understand. Because surely in the darkroom, if you give something more or less light, you will change the tone of it, the blackness or the whiteness of it gradually. Yeah. It won't jump from one to another.
Well, if you go back to what I mentioned about metering systems, right? This is your 18% grey, number 5. Every metering system, if you photograph a piece of white, it comes out that grey. If you photograph something black, it comes out that grey.
Yeah.
18%. The modern metering systems maybe do it better nowadays, but going back to the old days, you know, that was your mid-grey. You actually had a card, a mid-grey card, which you would use with a light meter to measure the light falling on your subject or whatever, you know. Now, the zones are very distinct. So each zone is like one stop of light, and as in your camera, you know.
Right, yeah. So I think that's where I've misunderstood you, but I understand now. Thank you. Sorry, you would go from
F8, F11, F16, F22. Mm. It's Lynette's my fault because I galloped through this, you know, and I shouldn't have done. But the text here is worthwhile reading. I'll send this to Alan as well. He'll put it in his bits and pieces, and along with the other bits and pieces as well. And I don't want to bog people down with this. I just wanted to use this as a kind of an introduction to where I've come from in my photographic life, as it were. This is what I studied, the zone system, with Les McLean and others, and to try and get an understanding of it. You know, Les was very good with this when he was explaining it, you know. But I'm talking about nearly 40 years ago when I've done all this. the memory's faded slightly in that time. But we used to have many conversations with the imprint group as well, you know, about the ins and outs of all this. But hopefully that's explained it. Now, if we go back to to that one, and if you think about it, you know, again, like the stops on your camera lens, you can see how many more stops you've got. And this just gives a much, much smoother rendition across your print. You're right when you say black is always black and you can't get blacker than black. And white is always white and you can't get whiter than white. But what you can get is many more shades of grey in between. And that's basically all it is, I think.
Yeah. No, I understand now. Yes.
Good, good. I hope you do. I'm going to ask questions later on.
I would like to ask a question, David.
Yes, carry on, Ed, please.
Well, first one's a comment. I mean, we're seeing this Ansel Adams stuff, but I think you've got to be very careful. You don't get sucked into this too much, because at the end of the day, what's important is, are you happy with the print in your hand? Not just a comment. Now, Peter, we've talked at length about all this thing about processing and things like that, but in some respects, you may have given the impression that you can do everything right in Photoshop. You have one thing you haven't mentioned, and I think it's very important, and you may like to comment, well, I expect you to comment, is the camera. So would you like to comment on that, well, thing, please?
You're right, Ed. If you don't get it right in the camera, it's like when I first started talking, I said you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. So if you've got an image that's badly exposed or whatever, you know, it's not sharp or whatever, you're not going to make a good image from it, are you? We all know that. It's but with a modern camera, you know, bad exposure should be a thing of the past. With the modern metering systems and all that, you should never, or very rarely, would you encounter the bad exposure. You know, I think you might get extremes of light, of course, where the light is so contrasty you can still trick the metering system a little bit. You know, but then we've got the added advantage of being able to look at the histogram, or you can just review your image on the back screen. And you know, you can learn an awful lot from that. What I'm trying to put over is that this system that I use is so simple, and it really is foolproof in the extent that you can recover your highlights, you can recover the information on your shadows. And this is what we used to do in the dark room. We would make what you would call a pilot print. And that pilot print would have all the information that was available from that negative. Everything that was there. It was flat as anything, but you saw the information. And then from there, you would decide what grade of paper you would use. Your test strip would determine the correct exposure of what you wanted. And then once you got to that point, then it was just allowing your creative juices to flow and produce your masterpieces.
Well, that test print would be equivalent to what you see from a raw image, isn't it?
Yes, that's exactly what I've done. You know, when I take this into, where are we? We'll get back into Photoshop. When I take this into the camera raw filter, what I'm doing is I'm just creating it like a pilot print, a test print. You know, so you know. We'll straighten it up. It's a great little tool for straightening things up, because I mean, inevitably, you know, your camera, especially wide angle lens, it's going to tilt everything, isn't it? Or you might have one length longer than the other, that type of thing, you know. But here we are, you know, the formula is drag the highlight over, drag the shadow over, pick up the white point, but by holding the Alt key down till you get just a couple of pixels. I'm not going to be too fussy with this. You've got the idea by now. And there we go. That's our pilot print, if you like. That's what I would have produced in the dark room on a grade one, something like that. And then I'd make an assessment and decide to go to a grade two, three, four, whatever, via test strips. You use a test strip for the exposure, you use a test strip to determine your grade, what grade you wanted it on as well. And then, you know, then you take it from there, you know, and the next step from here, now that we've got my reference point on this is going to be the graffiti, because I've got the blue was in here and the yellow was here. I could include the red is a reference point as well. And you know what I was saying, if you go into the black and white mix now, locally, alter the contrast, you can see the red darkening down, and the blues, we can lighten a bit. So we've altered the contrast straight away, just locally, before we've even, you know, we've gone from that to that, and now we can just, we're letting my creative juices flow now with the other alterations we can make. I'll pick up and double click these little triangles and then reset them as well, you know. I just want to pull this over. I don't always put the mask on, because you get used to knowing where everything's going to be, you know. And I just balance that up a little bit. And then I think I might put a little bit on the bottom here as well. So again, we're just locally altering everything, you know. So, you know, we're just playing around with the contrast. I think with this one as well, I think the the podcast can take a little bit of a kick, and maybe. But that's as much as I want to do. I can't think of anything else I would want to. I'll put a vignette round, of course. Always finish off with that. It's that quick. Most of my images I'll process in a couple of minutes, because it's like you gain experience. And that's what I think darkroom work and now the computer, it's all about gaining experience and making it easy. And that's the thing I found with this system, and with the correct assessment of the image, I find it's just so simple. That's the beauty of it. And then you can go into Photoshop and do anything you like after that. This is just the basics of getting into Photoshop.
Can I just say, Peter, you taught me a few years ago now, that basic, getting your basic image, your flat image, as you call it.
Yeah.
Every image I process, I still do that religiously. Good. And I think it's absolutely brilliant. Definitely worth doing, yeah.
Thank you.
Can I just say something, Peter? You've gone to, it's Les here. Yeah. You've gone to the bother of taking off the clipping, adjusting your black and white. So you've taken off the clipping when you pressed your Alt key. As soon as you put contrast in, you're starting to clip on your blacks, and that's shown on the histogram. Yeah. Are you worried about that, or are you just looking at the overall effect?
I think what you've got to do, Les, you've got to decide that with blacks in particular, just how much detail you require, you know, and if you clip them, well, it's fine. I think, like, in this image here, you know, you can see the black on the top right. It's not particularly important in the image, you know, that you have detail. I think what it is, the whole point I'm trying to make is get the image to a point where you can make this assessment of what you're going to leave in and what you're going to take out, you know. And it's very much the same in the dark room. You would, you know, determine your exposure, determine your what grade of paper you wanted for contrast. And you, along that way, you were deciding what to leave in and what to leave out. If it's a major issue, then you wouldn't take it that far.
Yeah.
I don't worry too much about the. I like to do mine visually, rather than use the histogram and stuff. I'm probably just not changing my habits, you know. But one thing I've almost forgot to mention, actually, if you haven't calibrated your screen, then you really ought to. If I come off all this, I might be able to. I'll stop screen sharing, so I can go back to my camera. Right. I'll just, if I can, I don't know if you can, that's my setup there. I'll push back a little bit. And can you see the blue light in the bottom right-hand corner?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's a spider that I've got. And it's constantly monitoring the ambient light on my screen, so I maintain the calibration. Now, the club's got a calibration kit, Spider, and if you haven't calibrated your screen, you really ought to think about doing it, you know, so that you get your screen as near to the print as possible. So, you know, when you're comparing the two, they're very, very close. And the other thing, of course, which is really, really important, is your profiles. The club's got the kit for doing the profiles, your own profiles, and it's very easy to do. There's instructions in the kit to do it. I think it takes three sheets of paper, and then you use the scanner thing to do the profiles. You can use the generic ones that come with your paper. That's another reason why I stick with the same paper all the time, because otherwise you've got to do the profiling with each different paper that you use. the generic ones are sometimes they're great. Some people they work for some people, but don't work for me. I always get a cast, and I don't know why. Because the generic ones should work for everybody, really, in theory. But anyway, I've done my own using the club gear. You print it out one day, and then let the ink dry and harden off properly. If you don't, there's a tendency to scratch the prints while you're doing the scanning. It's like a spectrophotometer that you're using, and it's very, very accurate and very, very good. If you're not sure, I'm more than willing to show you how to work it. It's a very simple piece of kit. Having said that, it's simple because I enjoy doing things like that. I enjoy that. It's to some people, it's a chore.
To butt in there, if you haven't done profiling and you're not happy about doing it, there's a remote profiling service called Log Me In that will take control of your screen and profile it for you.
Ah, right. The paper manufacturers, like Photospeed, they offer a free profiling service as well. You print out their image, follow their instruction, print it out, post it off to them, and they email you back the profile, which self-extracts.
Do you use the profiles for your black and white work or only your colour?
On the black and white. A profile for black and white.
Because I was told like by Permajet some time ago that it wouldn't make much difference with the black and white, but it was very important to use them with a colour.
When I met Toby Herlinger from Photospeed, he's doing a seminar for at Newton, and he advised that you profile in colour and that you print using your colour printer, not you don't flick it into monochrome or black and white. He advised that you print out in colour, and I've stuck to that as well.
But Peter, it's very important that before you do your final print, is to do a contact print, even if it's a 4x3 or 6x4. Because it's very important that it's what you want rather than what other people might see.
There's no, although I've given you a formula to follow there, you get to a point where, you know, you've done that, and now you need to use your own kind of creativity and judgment, etc., to take it the way you want it to go, you know. It's not a formula that for everybody to get the same print all the time. If you know what I mean, it's just a starting point. Get to that point, and then you make your assessments about whether you want to, you know, how far or where you want to take your print, as it's always been. Just to go back to Ed there for a second. I do 6x4s. I've got a pile of them there. That's what I do. I do every picture, every photograph I take, I do a 6x4. And the reason why I do that is you can live with it. Each day you can stand it up, you can go and have a look at it, you can look at it in different lights, you know. My favourite place to look at an image is to take it in the bathroom, because the light is very dappled and not dappled, diffused, and it's quite easy to to see what you're doing and see whether there's anything further you want to do. You want to improve it anymore. That's a great thing on the computer, when you can switch off halfway through an image, processing an image, and go back to it the next day or the next week or the next year. It's brilliant for that. Where the dark room, you really I would often get in the door at 2 o'clock in the morning of my wife saying, "You're at work at 5, by the way."
What about the piles of paper, Peter, in the corner?
Oh, God, bucketfuls, wasn't it? Well, that's it. In theory, with digital, you should never ruin a sheet of paper. In theory. Well, my waste bin is empty. At the minute. I hope that's been helpful.
Yeah,
and you know, I'm only at the end of the phone if you want to do you know, to have a chat about anything, but I hope to see better prints next season. that's the ultimate target of all this, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's a little while ago. This might be my last presentation ever, because a little while ago, I decided that I'm 75 in a couple of years' time, and I decided I'm retiring from all this sort of thing. You know,
that's nothing.
You know, I'm sick of driving. Down to Harrogate or places like that and getting home at midnight, and I thought, oh, I'm going to give it all up in a couple of years' time. And then just a few weeks ago, I got a thing from Pax Garabadian saying that I hadn't filled the form in for the NCPF handbook, and I thought now's the time to get out. So I was going for the NCPF and the PAGB handbooks. Most of my talks next year have been cancelled anyway with the bloody virus. So I thought, well, I might as well get out now while the going's good. I think I've got two or three talks left, and they haven't been cancelled yet. And I don't know why. They should have been. But I leave that up to the clubs to cancel them rather than me. But I've been beating the drum for 40 years, and it's time to stop beating it.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Don't be so enthusiastic to encourage him to stop.
Right.
Sorry?
Yeah. Come to the community centre, can't you? You don't have to go that far.
So you get to a point, Dave, where you know you've done enough.
Mm-hmm.
You've done enough, you know. It's
like a golf as well.
Pardon?
Does that apply to golf as well?
I've just stopped the golf.
David, rest assured, I'm working on the mind. Don't worry.
I think that doesn't mean that I'm not going to do stuff for the club. That's you know, it's just I'm not traveling around the country anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Roy knows where I'm coming from with that.
Well, I stopped because, not because I didn't want to do the talks, but because I didn't want to drive home on a pouring wet night. So that sort of cut me out. But funny enough, you're talking about lectures. I've been doing a bit of clearing out in lockdown, of course. And today I pulled out a file which said lectures. It's a very fat file. And I decided that I was going to chuck it all away in the recycling without reading anything, because if you start, you're there forever. But the colour thing caught my eye, so I did pull that out, and it was a tourist map of Durham, which Durham had sent me when they moved to show me where they were. And it's rather nice, actually. I've kept it because it reminded you where everything was in Durham. And the next item immediately below it was a day of photography in Ireland, run by the RPS, and I looked at it. I mean, the Irish always exaggerate, you can't believe what they say, but on the other hand, it didn't do your ego any harm. It said Roy Elwood is one of the finest print workers in the UK. And I shared a platform with Arnold Hubbard, and it said that Arnold Hubbard was the jewel in the crown of printing, of photography in the UK. So, everything else has gone in the recycling.
Thank you, nice Roy. Thank you, Roy, for that. Was Barnard Castle on your map of County Durham?
But you can go too far. But in fact, the last talks I did were at Dumfries, because you don't have to drive back in the dark, because they put you up overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the ones that you go to Harrogate or something, and you're driving back in the dark on a wet night. And when you get in your 90s, if you make it, you'll find that isn't quite as much fun as it was.
Great. Well, thank you very much. That was fascinating. Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, very good.
Thanks, Peter.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Has anybody got any notices they want to say? Because I'm just going to mention a few things about the summer programme.
Could I just say thank you very much for letting me join you again? It's been really good seeing you all.
We don't have any attendance, please, nowadays. We're back to normal.
Nice to see you, Sandra.
Thank you.
Take care, Sandra.
And you lot. Look after yourselves.
Ivan, thank you.
Right, thanks. I'll go now if you're doing your notices. Thanks.
Okay.
Good night.
So basically, as you'll have seen from Alan's wonderful bits and pieces, we've got this summer program. And there's a few interesting things I want to highlight. Next week,
Oh dear. Hello. No.